We're learning that Russia's death toll from the pandemic may be 3 times higher than what's been reported. Health officials say deaths linked to COVID-19, but not listed as the main cause of death, have not been included in the total so far. Adding to them would mean that Russia would have the 3rd highest COVID death toll in the world. Another story we've been watching in Russia this year is the poisoning of Alexei Navalny, a fierce critic of President Putin. Reports have linked the Kremlin to the poisoning, a charge Putin denies. Navalny survived, but Russian authorities continue to target him. They announced new fraud accusations against him on Tuesday. As part of our end-of-year conversations, I spoke earlier with the BBC's Steve Rosenberg in Moscow, and I asked him to describe the toll beyond the numbers that the pandemic has taken on Russia in 2020.
It's taken a toll on the economy. It's dealt a big blow to Russian standard of living. Russia's no exception here, of course. But, you know, one thing I've heard many times here over the past few months is people complaining that the scale of financial support that they've been getting from their government isn't as big as that given in other countries. Plus, I've got a stack of the latest Russian newspapers here on the table, and they are full of economic doom and gloom linked to the pandemic. Even the pro-Kremlin ones, I'll give you a bit of a flavour of some of the headlines. One says, the unemployed will bankrupt the banks. And another says, the fall in real incomes, rising unemployment will spark a crisis in the banking sector. Only sausage shops will be left, says another. So I think the feeling is that because of the pandemic, you know, Russia is facing serious economic problems, which really will show up clearly in the new year.
That financial support argument sounds very familiar. We're having that same conversation here in the United States. How does that translate into the way people feel about President Putin and how he's responded to COVID-19?
If you look at the polling, President Putin's approval rating now is around 65%. Now, that is considerably down on what it was a few years back. I remember 5 years ago, it stood at 85%. But figures, numbers don't really tell you the full story of Vladimir Putin and what the Russian people think of him. We travel a lot across this massive country. Even in this pandemic year, we've managed to get around, and we speak to lots of Russians all the time. And my impression is, Tanya, that Mr. Putin's core support is far less than 65%, perhaps 3 times less. There's a much larger group of Russians that takes little interest in politics or politicians or the Kremlin. They just focus on their own lives, on their own everyday problems. There are Russians who would like political change. They'd like someone new running the country, but they don't really believe that they've got the power to make that happen. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got those Russians who want to take to the streets and demand political change. Not many of them. So in many ways, the Kremlin relies on the big group, the widespread apathy and indifference, really, to politics.
Let's talk a little bit about Russia's relationship with the United States. There's been so much written, said, and analyzed about President Putin and President Trump's relationship. We remember that famous press conference in Helsinki when President Trump did not confront Putin about these accusations of interference in the 2016 election. At the same time, the Trump administration continues to sanction Russia. How would you describe the Trump-Putin relationship?
Russia had very high hopes for Donald Trump. Officials in Russia hoped that Donald Trump would ride to the rescue of U.S.-Russian relations, kind of like a knight in shining armor, and make everything good again. You know, he'd scrap sanctions, mm-hmm. he'd recognize Crimea that Moscow annexed from Ukraine as part of Russia, and he'd give Putin the big glitzy summit that Putin wanted, where Trump and Putin would basically sit at the top table, you know, of geopolitics, and resolve the big issues of the world like Roosevelt and Stalin after the war. Well, none of that happened. And in fact, I mean, U.S.-Russian relations plummeted. But at the same time, you know, Russia did benefit, I think, from 4 years of Donald Trump in the White House. For a start, it was nice for the Russians to have a U.S. president who didn't criticize Russia all the time, or Putin. In fact, Donald Trump often praised the Kremlin leader. Plus, I think the weakening of the Western alliance under Donald Trump, that was something viewed positively in Moscow. And that probably will come to an end, I would think, under Joe Biden.
How does the Kremlin view Joe Biden? We know that, President-elect Joe Biden is now promising to punish Russia for this major cyber attack. What are they anticipating from a Biden presidency?
I think they're worried. Eventually, Vladimir Putin did congratulate Joe Biden. It took 6 weeks, but he sent him a telegram. And one of the most popular newspapers here, pro-Kremlin, announced to the Russian people that we have turned the page in US-Russian relations and started afresh. But I think that is wishful thinking, because we know that Joe Biden is a vocal critic of the Kremlin. He's named Russia as the biggest threat to America. And then you have the question of personal chemistry, which is so important, isn't it, in international relations and in US-Russian relations. I mean, Gorbachev and Reagan had personal chemistry, buckets of it, and they did great things together. Bill Clinton and Boris Yeltsin had personal chemistry. But Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin, there's no sign of that. In fact, there's an interesting story that Joe Biden told a few years ago. He recounted his visit to Moscow in 2011 when he was vice president. And he was standing close to Putin, and apparently he looked Putin in the eyes and concluded that Mr. Putin had no soul and told him that. Now, that is not the stuff, the foundation, is it, for a beautiful friendship, US-Russian friendship. And then you've got these recent claims that Russia was behind the massive cyber attack on US government departments and agencies. That doesn't help the relationship get off to a good start either. And one of the papers actually I've got in front of me says this about US-Russian relations following news of that hack and the finger being pointed at Moscow. It says, for those experts on US-Russian relations who may have been hoping for at least some improvement under Biden, the only career options left are to do themselves in, change profession, or smash their computers with a hammer. So I think there is an expectation that the relationship between Moscow and Washington is not going to improve anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. President Putin held his annual end-of-year press conference recently, and you actually asked him several questions. Let's listen to a bit of that back and forth.
Steve Rosenberg, BBC News. Господин президент, все чаще звучит фраза.
This was my question to President Putin. Do you think you bear any responsibility at all for the new Cold War, the current tension between East and West, considering you've been in power now for 20 years? I mean, Russia is constantly blaming external forces for the tension. I asked him whether Russia was all white and fluffy. There's a famous Russian expression, all white and fluffy, which kind of means squeaky clean. And I asked President Putin whether he thought that Russia was all white and fluffy. And he said that compared to the West, compared to you, yes, we are all white and fluffy. He said that NATO had promised not to expand to the East after the collapse of the Soviet Union. But you broke your word, he said. So I think that showed a Russian leader who bears grudges and believes that he's been deceived by the West, whether that's the case or not. He believes that various promises were made to Russia and that those promises were broken, and that he believes that he has the moral right to act in the way that he is acting.
You know, Steve, here in the United States, we've had our own questions about whether President Trump is actually going to leave the White House. Hasn't Putin basically choreographed things so that he could basically be Russia's leader for the rest of his life? We've been reporting on this throughout the year.
Well, you know, it's been a pretty bad year for Vladimir Putin in many ways. You know, the coronavirus pandemic, street protests in the Far East, all kinds of things. But one thing he's managed to pull off this year, he's managed to change the Russian constitution, or rather he choreographed it as the Russian people voting to change the constitution and bring in lots of changes, one of which is he would have the chance now, if he so desires, to run for office again and again, in fact, and stay in power potentially until 2036. That it's far too early to say whether Vladimir Putin is going to run for office again in 2024, let alone whether he's going to stay in power until 2036.
Mm. Before I let you go, Steve, I want to talk with you about something else. You're really active on Twitter at BBC Steve R. You give your followers a sense of what Russians are reading and seeing on TV and what's being sold in the papers, as you're laying out so well for us here. Something else you do on Twitter is treat us to these piano performances. And you actually recorded a piece for us that we're going to hear as we say goodbye. Tell us a little about it.
This is a very popular piece. From Soviet times, it's a famous Russian song called Snowfall by Alexei Yekimyan. This has been such a crazy year, hasn't it, for everybody? For me, music's been a way of kind of getting through this year.
Wonderful. Happy holidays. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All the best to you.